Blog Talk Radio.
James Bostic here, Conservative's Perspective, and tonight we are doing the live incarnation here at the Patriot Nation Radio Network. Mark Hoffman will not be on tonight. He's in a two-week vacation mode. He's gone back up north to New York, spent some time with his elderly father, and he's going to be gone for a couple of weeks. So, probably not going to hear him tonight since he's not around, and I think maybe Tuesday night. Next Thursday we might see him back. I'm not exactly sure, but we'll keep up with that. Anyway, it's good to have you here. We do a recorded version on the weekend, usually Saturdays or Sundays. It's transcribed at an earlier date for replay at a later convenient time. And that goes through the Talk America Radio Network, talkamericaradio.org. You can go there. They have a couple of different audio streams, the Liberty and the Justice stream both. And ACP is heard there various times throughout the day and the week. Special shout out, because I'm pretty sure the girls are listening, the Ambers, ladies and gentlemen, the only officially sanctioned belly dancing group in conservative radio. Actually, I'm just going to say all of radio. You girls have got a lock on it, man. You're exclusive to the nth degree, and we're happy that you're listening. Tonight's a class night, and when they're not working, they tune in, and we're happy to have all the girls listening. So, having said that, let me say this. There's been a lot of crazy stuff happening in the last three weeks, just wise. There's no question about it. And some of these chickens did not take long to come home to roost. Now, let's take a look at last Sunday. And I found this article over at frontpagemagazine.com by Kenneth Timmerman. Over the weekend, on Sunday, here's what happened. There was a tweet. And, you know, Donald Trump, Twitter is Donald Trump's, it's his laser pointer. Twitter is Donald Trump's laser pointer. And the press and all those folks on the left who lose their mind at every single damn thing he tweets, those are the kittens, see? And he just runs them all over the place. Well, on Sunday, Iranian President Rouhani was responding to a speech that was made by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo at the Reagan Library. And basically what they were doing was they were talking about the new foreign policy doctrine concerning Iran. Okay, we're going to cut off, you know, we're just going to squeeze them with sanctions. We're not going to let, it's going to be the same thing as with North Korea. We're not going to let them expand their nuclear weapons capability any further. We're not going to be sending them money, plane loads of money stacked up on pallets with shrink wrap, $400 billion. And that money went right into the pockets of Hamas, of the Iranian Republican Guard. It went right into the pockets of the Muslim Brotherhood. So Pompeo he gives this speech. And in response to the speech, Hassan Rouhani, president of Iran, says that America should know that peace with Iran is the mother of all peace, and war with Iran is the mother of all wars. Well, here's what Donald Trump had to say. Excuse me. To Iranian President Rouhani, never ever threaten the United States again, or you will suffer consequences the likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before. We are no longer a country that will stand for your demented words of violence and death. Be cautious. Well, you can just imagine, if you haven't heard, you know, you can probably imagine what the CNN and the NBC, CBS, ABC types, the National Public Radio minions, all these people, and Hollywood had to say about Donald Trump saying something like this. They go crazy. And then there are those that say, you know, it's foolish for you to, in the words of the crocodile hunter, you know, jam your thumb up the Iranians' butthole, because, you know, it's going to be more than you can handle. You're not going to be able to take that kind of ticked off. I don't know how the Iranians would feel about it, but that's what I'm thinking. And but here's the thing. Donald Trump knows exactly what he's doing. And every time this has happened, we're going to touch on Korea, too. We're going to touch on North Korea. So he sends out this tweet. The people lose their minds. They say this is the height, the acme of folly to go ahead and try and get in a Twitter war with the Iranians. You look phony and you look like a jerk. So in the speech at the Reagan Library, here's what they said, or this is what Pompeo said. The mission set for our team is clear. It is to deny the Iranian leadership, the mullahs, the resources, the wealth, the funds, the capacity to continue to foment terrorism around the world, and to deny the people inside Iran the freedoms that they so richly deserve. And you've seen, you know, Rachel Maddow tweets this, The Atlantic tweets that, The Washington Post says something else, Huffington Post, you know, they're you know, doing what they do. And what they're trying to do desperately is to invalidate or marginalize, or in other way, or, you know, in some other way to try and defang Trump's foreign policy when it comes to Iran. And, they, you know, he doesn't mean it. He's not serious. It's just Twitter. And this guy's so crazy, he thinks that Twitter's, you know, harmless. He doesn't know that the mullahs are going to get upset over this. And then the left goes around clutching their pearls and living in fear. January 20th, let's find out if Donald Trump is serious about Iran. January 20th, 2017, Donald Trump takes office. January 29th, 17, Iran launches a medium-range nuclear-capable missile, that means it could carry a nuclear warhead, to probe the intentions of the new administration. Well, we're going to set this thing off and let's see what he does. Does he get all excited and fuss at everybody, but then ultimately nothing happens, or is there going to be something to worry about? Okay, so January 29th, they launched this missile. February 1st, National Security Advisor Michael Flynn makes an appearance in the White House briefing room telling reporters that the administration is officially putting Iran on notice to stop these kind of tests. February 3rd, 2 days later, the U.S. administration, the Trump administration, imposes new sanctions on Iranian individuals and companies that are involved in the missile program. Okay. Iran chilled out for about 7 months after that. The next time they conducted a missile test was in September 2017, and it prompted an immediate, if restrained, response from the president. And let's see what he said here. I'm trying to pull it up, and sometimes page 17, just a year ago. Here's some things that were happening in addition to this missile test. He's up to his neck in this witch hunt with the Mueller probe. He was being advised by a couple of guys at that time, Rex Tillerson, who was still Secretary of State, and National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster, both globalist types and both eager beavers when it came to preserving this disastrous nuclear deal that the Obama administration put in place with Iran. Nevertheless, October 13th, 2017, President Trump took the first step towards withdrawing from that deal by refusing to certify that Iran was in compliance. He pulled out formally this last May 8th, unleashing a firestorm of doom and gloom predictions from our European allies and from former Obama administration officials who basically were behaving like official lobbyists for the mullahs in Tehran. Well, the Iranians responded by threatening to immediately resume uranium enrichment. And that was a gesture which former International Nuclear Inspector David Albright qualified as more bark than bite. And once again, as they always do, to threaten closing the Strait of Hormuz to international shipping. If they don't threaten to close it once a month, they might forget where it is. And here's something else you might want to be aware of. You remember how we used to see all those little fast attack boats from the Iranian Navy harassing and interfering with U.S. naval vessels in that area? Well, Iranian harassment of U.S. warships in the Persian Gulf ceased almost as soon as President Trump took office in January 2017, going down from 36 incidents in 2016 to 14 incidents in 2017. In the past 12 months, the Iranian Navy and the Iranian Republican Guard Council fast attack boats have not once threatened a United States warship. Do you know why? Well, in the case of Iran, sometimes it's necessary to speak loudly and carry a big stick. And that's what President Trump's approach has been, and President Trump's approach is working. The Iran, the Republican Council, the Republican Guard Council in Iran has scaled back on its ballistic missile tests, and in recent months has even kind of reined in their Houthi allies, the terrorist groups in Yemen, because they've been firing missiles into the UAE and Saudi Arabia just the same way that the Palestinians fire rockets from Gaza into Israel. Everywhere Iran goes in Syria, they're either being attacked by military airstrikes, the Air Force, the Navy, or drone strikes of some kind on fundamentally an unlimited scale. And they're coming from the Israeli Air Force. When the time comes for us to act, as we have in the past, we will do so. So, again, what you got to do with the president, and I know that there are probably a lot of faithful out there that you hear all this stuff, you're bombarded with it. I mean, they've done it ever since the guy announced he was running. Did you know before Donald Trump announced he was running for president, no one hated him? No one. He was loved by everybody. Jesse Jackson loved him. Al Sharpton loved him. Liberals loved him. Republicans loved him. Hollywood loved him. Everybody loved the guy. He runs for president. Look what happens. Look how they do. So, again, it's not, it is not what the president says, but rather what the president does. And here's what they're going to do. Again, Secretary of State, Reagan Library. For a million Iranian Americans in Southern California alone, we have many Iranian American guests from all across the United States tonight here as well. Thank you, and I look forward to hearing from you this evening. I recognize that the Iranian diaspora is diverse. There are many faith backgrounds, many different walks of life, and that's a good thing, and all Iranian Americans see things the same way. But I think everyone can agree that the regime in Iran has been a nightmare for the Iranian people, and it is important that your unity on that point is not diminished by differences elsewhere. To our Iranian American friends tonight, I want to tell you that the Trump administration dreams the same dreams for the people of Iran as you do, and through our labors and God's providence, that day will come true. Next year will mark the 40th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, and I'll spell out more in a moment the 40 years of fruit from that revolution have been bitter. 40 years of kleptocracy, 40 years of the people's wealth squandered on supporting terrorism, 40 years of ordinary Iranians thrown in jail for peaceful expressions of their rights. Why has the regime conducted itself in such an abhorrent way over the past 40 years and subjected its people to these conditions? Well, it's an important question. The ideologues who forcibly came to power in 1979 and remain in power today are driven by a desire to conform all, and listen to this desire, all of Iranian society to the tenets of the Islamic Revolution. The regime is also committed to spreading the revolution to other countries by force if necessary. The total fulfillment of the revolution at home and abroad is the regime's ultimate goal. It drives their behavior. Thus, the regime has spent 40 years mobilizing all elements of the Iranian economy, foreign policy, and political life in service of that objective. To the regime, property or prosperity, security, and freedom for the Iranian people are acceptable casualties in the march to fulfill the revolution. Who is it in America? Is there any group in America today whose main objective is to conform all of American society to the tenets of what they believe. Anybody in the country doing that?
Of course we know there are.
So he has the speech. He calls the mullahs what they are. And kleptocracy is a very, very apt description of what's going on with the mullahs and how they're just robbing the people blind. The one thing, okay, every time we turned around during the Obama administration, we heard about Iranian fast attack boats moving up on destroyers or missile frigates or task force, whatever we had out there in the Strait or in the Persian Gulf, harassing them. The rules of engagement were such that it's astonishing to me that no one got killed, that there wasn't an incident like USS Cole. You guys remember USS Cole? The suicide boat came up beside him, blew a hole in the bulkhead right there just at the waterline. Yeah, that could have happened out there too. And I'm surprised that it didn't. And it may have been moving in that direction. But then what happened? Barack Obama leaves office and Donald Trump steps in. The fast attack boat harassment stops completely. What's that remind you of? Does that remind you of, as for me as a young man, it reminds me of Jimmy Carter leaving office. And shortly after Ronald Reagan took the oath of office, our hostages that were being held in Iran came home. I'm not making comparisons, okay? Ronald Reagan was Ronald Reagan. Donald Trump is Donald Trump. Are there similarities? Perhaps. I'm not going to get into it. There are a lot of people in terms of wanting to restore America to its position of preeminence among the nations of the earth. Yeah. But beyond that, they both got their own ways of doing things, and they're both effective with those ways. But, yeah, Ronald Reagan takes the oath of office. Iranian hostages were home within a week, I think. Donald Trump takes the oath of office. Fast attack boats are back at base. They're not running around out in the Gulf. So it isn't, and we're going to find some more examples of this. It isn't what Donald Trump says. Just not. It isn't what he says. It's what he does. And now that we've taken a look, we're coming in close. I'm going to take the music break early this evening. I've got some stuff going on. I'm in the middle of a pork butt smoking marathon. Most of you know, Civil War reenactor, and the unit that I host, a Civil War reenactment coming up here in August, we're the host event for this thing, and one of the things we like to do for the reenactors is give them a good dinner on Saturday night. So I have 87 and two-thirds pounds of pork butt that's got to be rinsed and rubbed and smoked and then pulled apart. So that's what's going on here. And over the last couple of days, you know, it takes about 13 hours to smoke these things. And I do a couple at a time. Don't get any rush. Slow batches, slow cooked, small batches, rather. That's how you do it and get it tasting good. So I got a couple of butts in. I'm going to have to throw some wood chips on there. And close call last night. It's raining. I have an electric smoker. Not a good combination. I'm running around here at 10 o'clock like a chicken with my head cut off because these things have already been smoking for a few hours. I checked the radar. This wasn't supposed to happen, but it did. So I had to kind of get the – and it wouldn't be a problem ordinarily, I don't guess, but on the top of the smoker, there's this little box. It's a control panel where you set the time and temperature and stuff, and I figure if it gets wet, that's probably not a good thing. So I found some stuff and covered it up to protect it. Didn't rain long. Smoker doesn't seem to be any worse for the wear. As a matter of fact, it's smoking like 90 out there now with a couple more pork butts in there. So what I should have been doing while I was telling you all that was scrolling through my musical selection, but I didn't, and that's okay. So here's what we're going to do. We're just going to scroll now. Coming up on the other side after this brief musical interlude, what we will have is some more for instances there for you in terms of, again, you got to watch what the guy does. You don't watch what he says. You got to watch what he does. And nobody's going to tell you, and you got to watch for yourself, because the news isn't going to clue you in on this. Because if it's something positive, it's something good that's going to happen, they don't want you to know. They do not want you to know. So that's where I come in. I let you know what's happening. Still scrolling. Don't see a daggone thing. Okay, we will be back with more ACP after this brief musical interlude. Talk to you in a few.
It's knowing that your door is always open and your path is free to walk. That makes me tend to leave my sleeping bag rolled up and stashed behind your couch. And it's knowing I'm not shackled by forgotten words and bonds and the ink stains that are dried upon some line. That keeps you in the back roads by the rivers of my memory. It keeps you ever gentle on my mind. It's not clinging to the rocks and ivy planted on their columns now that bind me, or something that somebody said because they thought we'd fit together walking. It's just knowing that the world will not be cursing or forgiving when I walk along some railroad track and find that you're moving on the back road by the rivers of my memory, and for hours you're just gentle on my mind. Though the wheat fields and the clotheslines and the junkyards and the highways come between us, and some other woman's crying to her mother 'cause she turned and I was gone, I still might run in silence, tears of joy might stain my face, and a summer sun might burn me till I'm blind. But not to where I cannot see you walking on the back road by the rivers flowing gentle on my mind. I dip my cup of soup back from a gurgling, crackling cauldron in some train yard. My beard a roughening coal pile and a dirty hat pulled low across my face. Through cupped hands round the tin can, I pretend to hold you to my breast and find that you're waiting from the back roads by the rivers of my memory, ever smiling, ever gentle on my mind.
Everybody's gone away. Said they're moving to L.A. There's not a soul I know around. Everybody's leaving town. Some caught a freight, some caught a plane. Find the sunshine, leave the rain. They said this town will waste your time. I guess they're right, it's wasting mine. Some gotta win, some gotta lose. Good time, Charlie's got the blues. keeps telling me you're not a kid at 33. You play around, you lose your wife. You play too long, you lose your life. I got my pills to ease the pain. Can't find a thing to ease the rain. I'd love to try and settle down, but everybody's leaving town. Some gotta win, some gotta lose. Good time, Charlie, blood and blue. Good time, Charlie, got the blues. Good time, Charlie, got the blues.
Back with you, James Bostic, Conservative Perspective, here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network here at blogtalkradio.com. Here's what you do. You go to blogtalkradio.com, and then you then you look up the Patriot Nation Radio Network, and that's where you'll find me and our man Mark Hoffman. Once again, a reminder, Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch will not be on tonight. He's taken the family, and they've packed up the Vista Queen family truckster and headed on towards New York. That's where Mark's from. Yeah, you probably couldn't tell by listening to him. Mark's from New York. Lives in Florida, and he's up there. He's going to be visiting with his dad, and we wish him traveling mercies and hope he has a terrific time on his vacation. Good time Charlie's got the blues. You know what? I was a wee little nipper when that thing came out. The guy's name is Charlie. No, it's not Charlie. It's Denny Green, I think is his name. Kind of a one-off. It was a one-time, you know, one-hit wonder. Great tune in the early 70s. And usually when it comes to stuff like this, and there are exceptions, but ordinarily when it comes to stuff like this, I'm an originalist. And like I said, this song was, I don't know if it made it into the top 10. I remember hearing it on the radio, so it got a lot of airplay, so it must have made it, you know, must have made it up into the top 40. But Elvis did a version of this too. Oh yeah. And it's pretty good too. And then Elvis had they say, if you go over there and you listen to Jeeker in the speaker on Elvis satellite radio, they say that he had a very uncanny sense and an intuitive pick on songs that, you know, he felt he could represent, that he could sing. And this was one that he picked out. So good time Charlie's got the blues. I play it a little bit myself. I used to back in the old honky tonk days. But those are over. Glenn Campbell, of course, Gentle on My Mind, great tune, one of his signature tunes. And again, this was Gentle on My Mind was written by, don't mind me as I kick over furniture and everything, was written by Paul Hartford, John Hartford, excuse me, John Hartford. And, you know, he did it, but Glenn Campbell got a hold of it and boom, it took off. So it was a terrific, both terrific tunes. Sunday. Some tragedy, and you know, this is something we're numb to it in a way. We hear about it all the time, and we kind of, you know, we hear it and we go, yeah, that's what they always say. Sunday night, and as soon as I start sharing this with you, you know where I'm going with it. Sunday night, a Muslim named Faisal Hussein strolled calmly down Danforth Avenue in Toronto's Greek town. It's a popular area known for its restaurants and cafe. He pulled out a pistol and he started shooting into some of those restaurants. He murdered two people, injured another 13. Now, the most obvious, to me at any rate, and I think most right-thinking people, and when I say right, I don't mean right-wing, I mean as incorrectly thinking. The most obvious explanation for this is that Hussein was answering the call of the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda to do the lone wolf thing. Individual Muslims murder civilians in Western countries. They issued this call. ISIS issued this call back in 2014. Now, here's what they said. Okay, this is the mentality of the people that the left says, hey, what are you, some kind of racist for hating these people, for being suspicious of them? Anyway, so, oh, Muwahid, do not let this battle pass you by wherever you may be. You must strike the soldiers, the patrons, and troops of the Tawagit. Strike their police, strike their security and intelligence members, as well as their treacherous agents. Destroy their beds, embitter their lives for them, and busy them with themselves. If you can kill a disbelieving American or European, especially the spiteful and filthy French, or an Australian or a Canadian or any other disbeliever from the disbelievers waging war, including the citizens of the country that entered into a coalition against the Islamic State, then rely upon Allah and kill him in any manner or way, however it may be. If you're not able to find an IED or a bullet, then single out the disbelieving American, Frenchman, or any of their allies. Smash his head with a rock. Slaughter him with a knife. Run him over with your car. Throw him down from a high place, or choke him, or poison him. Muslims. Hussein's family, on the other hand, was ready with a different explanation. His parents naturally issued a statement saying, our son had severe mental health challenges, struggling with psychosis and depression his entire life. Yeah, ever since he got into the madrasa at about 5 years old, and they started to inculcate this philosophy into him. Well, we did our best to seek help for him throughout his life of struggle and pain. He's such a victim, the poor guy, he's a martyr. We could never imagine that this would be his devastating and destructive end. We were hoping for a little higher body count, but, you know, the kid did okay. And this, honestly, it might be more convincing if we hadn't heard it so many, many times. Every time this happens, last week in Paris, a Muslim hit a 69-year-old Jewish man, knocking him to the ground, then dragged him by the hair, all the while screaming, Allahu Akbar, long live Hitler, death to the Jews. The attacker was sent for a psychiatric evaluation. French authorities are apparently not even considering the possibility that he is a jihad terrorist with Islam's special hatred for Jews. Likewise, 2017, June, a Muslim stalked through a Jewish area of London screaming, Allah, Allah, I'm going to kill you all. He wasn't a jihadi either. He was detained by officers under the Mental Health Act. No one was injured. This is not being treated as terror-related. All right, that's all. Move along. Nothing else to see here. June 2017, a Muslim in the metro station in Lausanne, Switzerland, began screaming Allahu Akbar, causing commuters to run away in terror. Why? Because he is a terrorist. But there was nothing to be concerned about. The prosecutor explained, this is a person who was afraid his life was in danger. And at the height of the crisis, he started to face paranoia. And then he called to God for help. That's what he did last Friday in the subway, shouting Allahu Akbar. No, Jimmy's not making it up. Can't make it up. March 2017, a Muslim in Germany attacked a 59-year-old man riding his bicycle, bashing his skull with a hammer. Police announced, the suspect may have a mental illness and stressed that this is not jihad. He was just simply mentally ill. Another Muslim in Germany who wounded 9 people with an axe in a train station was also not a jihadi. He had mental health problems. But wait, there's so much more. May 2016, a Muslim screaming Allahu Akbar, an infidel, you must die, stabbed four people, killing one at a train station near Munich. Nonetheless, Bavarian security officials immediately denied that he had an Islamic extremist motive. Then, well, what caused the attack? Well, the state interior minister, Joachim Herrmann, says that the attack was caused by the assailant's mental disorders. Muslim arrested in June 2016 for a jihadi plot to attack tourists and the police. He was found with a knife and a machete, according to the Daily Telegraph. The suspect had a history of psychiatric problems and had been diagnosed as a schizophrenic, but is considered nonetheless truly radicalized with a serious profile. If they hadn't been able to tie him to any plot, to a jihadist plot of any kind, they would have never said that he was nonetheless truly radicalized and serious profile. They would have just left it off as he was another Middle Eastern bag of dates. August 2016, a Muslim stabbed six people in London, murdering one of them. The BBC reported that the Metropolitan Police's Assistant Commissioner for Specialist Operations, Mark Rowley, said the investigation was increasingly pointing to the attack being triggered by mental health issues. That was also the verdict in the, excuse me, I'm sorry about that. That was also the verdict in the case of a Muslim woman. And the reason I'm saying that is because her name looks like there are more letters than there actually are in the alphabet. Babakalova. I said I wasn't going to try it. Gilchera Babakalova. Okay, I did it. A Muslim woman who in May, sometimes it's a challenge, in May of 2016, beheaded a four-year-old girl and then paraded her severed head through the streets of Moscow. She screamed Allahu Akbar while brandishing the girl's severed head and said that Allah had ordered her to behead the girl. Seems like she had an Islamic State boyfriend. She got really religious not long before the beheading, and she started wearing a hijab. She said the beheading was revenge for Russian airstrikes on Muslims in Syria. She told her son pray five times a day and to live in accordance with Sharia. Despite all that, she was declared insane and not brought to trial. In Uruguay, Muslim screaming Allahu Akbar stabbed a Jewish man to death and later explained that in committing the murder, he had followed Allah's order. But a judge ruled he was suffering from chronic psychosis of the schizophrenic type and was not able to appreciate the wrongfulness of his action. Your Honor, I object. He very clearly appreciated his actions. In the same way, a Muslim, have you noticed all these cats are Muslim? Who was shouting Allahu Akbar, there it is again, outside a Brooklyn synagogue in July 2016 and had two knives in his car, was, according to the New York Daily News, nothing to be concerned about. Investigations by the NYPD and the FBI showed that the guy was emotionally disturbed and not a terrorist threat. Move along, show's over. Nothing to see here. Come on, people. Get out, huh? Mental illness is also the cause of anti-Americanism among Muslims. Military Times reported November 2015, a Jordanian police captain opened fire in an international police training facility, killing two Americans and three others. The government subsequently portrayed the police captain as troubled. Well, what else could he be? But here's the thing, and this is something I have not considered until I read this article and I'm going to share it with it, or really given any serious thought to. What all these people who downplay this and dismiss all this, they just dismiss out of hand all this jihadist activity, clearly jihadist activity, they just dismiss it as mental illness. What they never stop to think about is, what if it could be both? If Faisal Hussein really struggled with mental illness issues throughout his life, as his family claims, he may have considered himself to be under a curse from Allah and decided to do something great in order to get into Allah's good graces. And Islam teaches that there is no deed greater than jihad. A hadith has a man asking Muhammad, "Instruct me as to such a deed as equals jihad." Muhammad replied, "I did not find such a deed." But if Faisal Hussein was tormented by the idea that he had sinned, he might also have been trying to make sure the scale holding his good deeds outweighed the scale holding his evil deeds by performing what is, in Muhammad's view, the greatest deed of all. And what is that? There's no greater thing than to take out an infidel, to kill you, to kill me, to kill us. Yeah. So, in summary, there's no reason why an act of jihadist terror can't be performed by someone who is on the psychically marginal edge, and plenty of reasons why someone who is psychically marginal might go that route. But we're going to hear even more of the same old excuses in the coming days. Only by rejecting Islamophobia are we going to be able to keep the future Faisal Husseins from acting. The mental health, like everything else, is going to be made the responsibility of us, non-Muslims. The jihadist imperative in the Quran and the Sunnah is open-ended. In other words, jihad is to be waged against all infidels, not just those who are Islamophobic and not appeasement-minded, all of us. And so all these claims that are made after whatever latest jihadist attack comes out that Muslims are the real victims of jihad and require special accommodations in some way, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's not going to keep more Faisal Husseins from going around the bend. It's not going to do anything to blunt the force of the advancing jihad. I don't think, the level of savagery and the level of commitment to brutality and the level of fanaticism that's necessary to cut off a four-year-old girl's head, to just walk up into an area where people are sitting and eating and enjoying the day and then just start throwing lead around. Okay, there is a deficiency there. There's clearly some kind of sociopathology going on there. Number one, it's a heinous, terrible and horrific crime. And, they think they're doing something good. Every single jihadist that's rolled down the window and done a drive-by shooting with an AK or they've blown something up or they've cut somebody's head off or they've filled a cage with a bunch of Christians and then dropped it in a swimming pool and used underwater cameras to film them while they drown. Every single one of those times, they think they're doing something good. When they kill a Jew, when they kill a Christian, they think they're doing, when they burn down a church, they think they're doing something good. When they hijack airplanes and fly them into buildings, they think they're doing something good. And this goes back to something. I was going to talk about North Korea, but I think we're going to be stuck in this for all. Anyway, as far as North Korea goes, everybody said Singapore was a joke. Satellite reconnaissance confirms. Kim Jong-un is dismantling his production facilities. Yeah, they're making noise because he's holding on to the uranium. Why wouldn't he? He's probably doing this in a graded series of exposures. He's probably worried that perhaps somehow he's being tricked by Donald Trump, so he wants to have the uranium there to start back up. And if he thinks he's being double crossed, he's not being double crossed, and eventually he's going to turn that loose. Now, back to the jihad. The thing is, and there's a lot of different things tied up in this, and I've got 9 minutes, and I don't think I'm going to get to it all, but what we see as the good Muslim, the Muslim who minds his business, the Muslim who doesn't do anything bad to Christians or Jews, the Muslim who assimilates and manages his faith in a civilized and peaceable fashion, well, in Islam, that's the bad Muslim. Now, what we see is the bad Muslim, the Muslims we just talked about here, and all the terrible things, the terrible, brutal things that ISIS cats and fundamentalist Muslims do in their oppression of women, in the pedophilia and the pederasty and the homophobia. You know, you try and be gay in a Sharia town, they're going to throw you off a building. That's what's going to happen to you. They're not going to tolerate this. You're a woman, you try to walk around without your hijab, they're going to beat you. If they think you've disgraced the family bad enough, they're going to dig a hole and put you in it, and then they're going to stone you to death, and your family are the ones, your brothers, your father are going to be the ones calling you a whore and throwing the first stone. And these are the people the left want us to be tolerant and accepting of. The bad Muslim on the other side of the looking glass is the good Muslim. The Muslim that hijacks airplanes and flies them into buildings, good Muslim. Muslims in a suicide boat that rolls up on USS Cole, detonates right at her waterline, good Muslims. Muslims that cut the heads off of little kids or developmentally disabled people or whatever horrible things they do to gay people, those are good Muslims in Islam. And when you take these things, these backward things, and we're supposed to think that, you know, there's some kind of an equivalency, that all religions are good. No, all religions are not good. Actually, I'm not exactly sure if any religions are good. There is a personal relationship that I'm talking about in terms of Christianity. That's not what this talk is. This is clearly, this isn't even a religion. This is some type of theistic cult that oversees all facets of their life. It's rooted in their government, in their form of government, Sharia law. There is no law beyond Sharia. Here we're a constitutional republic. Muslims don't want to recognize that. They want to operate by Sharia law. Folks, Sharia law says they kill the unbelievers. No, I'm not making it up. You can check it out. That's what they did. And here's the thing that compounds it is the doctrine of taqiyya. It's okay to lie, to cheat, to take advantage of, or otherwise deceive and betray the infidels, the Christians, the Jews, the Buddhists, the Sikhs. And if you're not the right kind of Muslim, maybe those too. So when these things happen, and they trot out the same old, worn-out, lame excuses, we have to just keep calling them on it. And there's no way, I mean, these guys are not going to assimilate. And what's happening, too, and people don't want to talk about this either, but I'm going to. You see a lot of people throughout the world from Afghanistan, from Pakistan, from countries like this. And here's the deal. They don't have a problem with consanguineous marriage. What am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about inbreeding. You know, it's not uncommon for first cousins to be arranged to be wed, and then they have kids, and these kids they have problems. All right, we're not going to get into the I'm not going to get into the whole biological consequences of first cousins getting it on and having kids, because it's not, and you know what it is. And this has been going on for 700 years throughout the Islamic religion. Lots of places. No, nobody wants to talk about it, but it's a lot of places where this is going on. What is this doing to Muslims in general over the whole broad spectrum? Well, it's dropping their intelligence quotients. This has gone on for 700 years, people. Allah said it was cool, and they've taken him at his word. It's kind of a creepy thing to think about. And then when you have this dogged and brutal, savage indoctrination with the articles of Sharia law, man, this is a problem. This is a serious problem. We're dealing with an existential threat here with these people. Because their ability to reason is being dulled. This happens a lot. This intermarriage thing, I don't think I've got time. Yeah, I don't have time to go into it, man. I really wish I did, because it's pretty serious. But I had some statistics, and maybe we'll go back to it one day. I'll spend 2 minutes scanning through all my crap to find it. I should have had it. 90 seconds. Thank you, Guinevere. 90 seconds left. ACP. Her Tuesdays and Thursdays live, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, right here at Blog Talk Radio, under the studios of the Patriot Nation Radio Network. Also, TalkAmericaRadio.org is where you go. TalkAmericaRadio.org. Outstanding hosts, outstanding programming. ACP is proud and humbled to be a part of that organization as well. 60 seconds. We have a couple places on Facebook. We have ACP's Conservative Perspective podcast page, Talk America West Virginia page, Talk America Texas page. Need to go check those out as well. And you want to check in at Cowboy Logic Forum, Restoring America, or Cowboy Logic Restoring America Forum. I'm only one of the administrators. So anyway, you want to check those places out on Facebook. Those are presences where you can find ACP, as well as a lot of outstanding folks. That's all we're going to do. That's all I got to say. God bless each and every one of you. God bless America. And we'll see you back here next week when we'll take a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. You guys take good care. Thank you. We'll see you then.